Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me today is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. It is a very busy time in movie news, and as proud Americans, we celebrated the 4th of July this week. And so that is why there was no movies podcast last week. So we are going to be doubled up on information this week. And it is a very important time to be doubled up on information because there's a couple of really big conventions back to back here in July. So there will be plenty of news to get to. Let's start off by talking about the fact that while Steven Spielberg may be the most beloved filmmaker we currently have, the big friendly giant took a big friendly dump on the box office. Your thoughts on why the BFG did not take?
I think mostly because it was two things. One, it's a kid movie, and Dory is kind of running shop on that one, probably until this weekend. And two, even though it's a Ronald Dahl book, most people don't know what BFG is. So they may see the commercials and they say, oh, it is a giant, but they don't associate. It's not like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory knows Ronald Dahl, or like heck, even The Witches, that most people know that's like Ronald Dahl, or James and the Giant Peach. BFG is kind of just
due for its, which is due for a new,
that thing's got, it's pushing
1998 97 96 or 97, somewhere
yeah,
in that,
yeah, new was pushing was, 20 years,
and
yeah,
that was stop motion, I think, or some kind of
yeah, it
was animation
stop.
Yeah,
it was stop motion. They probably will remake it, especially after this one bombed. But that, I think that's pretty much it. People didn't know what it was. I didn't see it. I've heard that, you know, it's not like a all-timer for Spielberg, but it's like,
it's minor Spielberg.
Yeah,
it's the way I've heard it described.
Yeah, so,
and when you have a filmography that's like 50 films deep, I mean,
everybody's going to have something like, well, I've heard, from what I've heard, it sounds like it should have made, people think it should have made more money than it did, is worth more than it made, but
timing issue, maybe?
Yeah.
Just putting it on the wrong place in the calendar because you were basically competing against yourself with BFG and Dory.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't think Dory would have
legs.
But it's only like 2 weeks. Or that was the third week. You would think that you would have to know. I guess you figure BFG is going to take it from Dory, but if BFG was like in September, it probably does a lot better.
Yeah, that'd be my thought. But then again, Pan. So, But, I mean, my thought was, look, I'm a kid of the 90s. I grew up in elementary school reading those books, and those books are very important to me. One of my very first projects in elementary school was doing a papier-mâché peach while as we were reading James and the Giant Peach. And Willy Wonka we read many times in school. So I love his work, and I'm very familiar with it. I don't necessarily know that the generation that came after mine, kids in the late 90s, early 2000s, are as familiar with his works, and I'm not sure that they are as beloved by that generation. You know, the Goosebumps generation versus, you know, the Twilight generation. That there may be some disconnect there, that maybe Dahl's novels aren't as sentimental. And also, I think timing and just placement on the calendar, putting it in the first week of July, releasing it, first premiering it at Cannes, and then releasing it in July. I feel like, again, if you'd have hit this thing in September, that you would have had more room to run, especially with putting it squarely in between Dory and Secret Life of Pets.
Yeah.
There's just not really a lot of room for that. And then Disney, as well as the Disney marketing machine has been working all year, they didn't work very well on this movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all around, I don't think blamed its success to anyone. I think it'll find a good home on the Disney Channel at some point, and it'll find a good home on home video and on demand.
On Netflix.
On Netflix. Video. But I don't think that, they are going to take a significant bath on it, but they can afford to take a significant bath with the fact that four of the top five highest grossing movies of the year so far are Disney movies.
Yeah.
So I think they'll be okay. And Spielberg has moved on from the BFG, which he was shooting back-to-back with Bridge of Spies. A lot of time he was spending with Mark Rylance at that for last that period of time. And he's moved from that to Ready Player One, and we got some Ready Player One news this week as we found out that it is indeed begun filming. It had the guy from Silicon Valley and Deadpool as a hacker dude.
Weasel.
Yeah.
Him.
Yeah.
It added, guy in Transformers.
Yeah. It added him. It's added a couple of other actors along the way here in recent days, recent weeks. And it has got a March 2018 release date. What are your expectations, having read the book and having read the novel and just got finished seeing what Spielberg has done with an adaptation of a novel that's beloved, and with him saying this on the press tour for BFG, he's going to limit the amount of references to his own movie that are in the movie.
Yeah.
His own movies that are in the movie.
When I heard that part about him limiting himself in the movie, my first thought was, okay, then that might kind of hinder what goes on. But then I went back and I found a site that had all of the references to Spielberg, and not saying that there aren't a lot, but just looking at it, there's just a bunch of everything else. So he said he will keep some things in, specifically DeLorean. Like the DeLorean. I would imagine E.T. will still make it in there. But if he's taking out direct references to his name, I'm fine. Other little things, nods to him, that's fine, because there really is a whole lot of other stuff to put in there. So I'm looking forward to the movie. With the reaction to BFG, I don't know what Spielberg I'm going to get. I'm hoping that this will be his return to blockbuster Spielberg, because I think this is like tailor-made for him to do that. But he just hasn't done it in the last few movies. But
well, I mean, you're talking about his last three movies are Lincoln, which he hit out of the park.
Yeah.
Bridge of Spies, which he hit out of the park, and BFG, which he did a solid job on, just didn't find its audience.
Well, see, BFG is like, you know, that's that the CG kind of spectacle kind of thing. So that one is a solid job. A solid job for Spielberg. It's a good job for somebody else. So I'm not worried that it's going to be, like, terrible. It's just when you hear Spielberg, and if you've read this book, it's like you put those two together, you're expecting
magic.
Yeah. And we might not get magic. We might just get good. And good is fine, but you expect magic.
Well, I mean, it does also benefit from the fact that it's a March release date, but that March release date's pretty crowded. As we found out this week that the Tomb Raider reboot, which at one point I know was eyeing Daisy Ridley for the lead, but chose someone else to take on the Lara Croft mantle. You happen to remember who that was offhand?
The new one?
Mm-hmm.
Vikander?
Alicia Vikander, yeah. That's right. Vikander took on the role. It's set for a 2018 release date. What are your expectations for a Tomb Raider movie? As, you know, we move from Ready Player One, which is a video game. It's very heavy in computer and video game nods, and to, you know, a true video game adaptation. Following more in line with the new Tomb Raider movie, yeah, games than what Jolie did back in the early 2000s.
Because it's coming off those new games, and we have Alicia Vikander, who, you know, getting good people is always a good thing. I think Tomb Raider has a good shot, but it's just something about, like, straight-up video game movies like this that for some reason, they just can't seem to shake that they're a video game movie.
Assassin's Creed will have been out by this point.
Yeah.
And Warcraft made a whole lot of money in China, so...
But Warcraft is, like, a good example of it. It's, again, I didn't see it, but everybody that did see it was, like, if you play the game, you got everything in this movie. If you didn't, there were parts that you were like, I don't know what's going on, and that kind of disconnects people from the... disconnects the audience. I don't think Tomb Raider will have that problem, and if they get over that problem, they're probably halfway home. It's just... The video game stigma always sticks to something. If Assassin's Creed shakes it good, I'll feel better about Tomb Raider. But I think it'll. I think it has a good shot of being good. It's just until video games can prove me wrong.
But there is not another video game movie that is also slated for March 2018. You know, when Disney purchased Pixar outright, they instituted a plan of doing one original movie and one sequel going forward. That plan stops in 2019. Uh-huh. But before that policy ends, we are going to get a Wreck-It Ralph 2 and an Incredibles 2.
Thank God.
So what are your thoughts on Super Wreck-It Ralph?
We have to say that is not the confirmed title, but I think the director, that's the title he wants, and I really like it, so I hope that's the title. I love the first Wreck-It Ralph. I've been waiting for a sequel. It's to me, I'm surprised it's taking this long to get to a sequel. But I think it'll be good. And with what they're talking about, adding the whole internet thing and how that's going to affect the characters, and that automatically brings in more characters. And they've said after the first one, if they did another one, Mario's probably going to be in it. So all of those things.
Nintendo licensing is a very risky thing, but they did a really good job getting the rights to all the different characters they got for the original.
Yeah, they had Nintendo license because they had Bowser was in there in the bad guy therapy room. So I think Wreck-It Ralph is probably going to be good. Disney hasn't, with the animated stuff, they haven't missed in a while. And Ralph is tailor-made to have a sequel. So I think that one's going to crush in March.
Yes. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to Tomb Raider and seeing what they can do, especially those new games have a vastly different audience than what was around originally on the original PlayStation games. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. I do think that it benefits it if Assassin's Creed does well. Because then I think kind of that eases the burden going forward.
Yeah. Because we thought it was coming down to Warcraft and Assassin's Creed. So Warcraft, I can't say it was a failure, but it's I don't think it did as well as they wanted to, particularly here, but it did well enough to keep the ship going.
The good thing about it, but the thing is though, it had to pour word of mouth here. It didn't have Terminator Salvation word of mouth, but it still had a good bit of negative connotations to it here. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be my only concern with the... and I know we're probably going to get a Warcraft sequel for the same reason we're getting Transformers sequels.
Yeah.
But, one has to wonder if continuing to just make movies for the international markets is going to be the future... How badly are they going to do here? And how much of a bath can you afford to take domestically?
Yeah. It's, I don't, that model of surviving off of
90% of the movies released in China this year were imported.
Well,
it was 90-10 Japanese original cinema to imported cinema. They're flooding that marketplace.
Well, it seems to be fertile and working out for them, so we'll see more of that.
Alrighty, so speaking of the movie that does extremely well overseas but is loathed in America, so they are currently filming the Transformers The Last Night. I hear they are moved out of Cuba now. So... some set videos popped up and some photos popped up legally via Michael Bay's Instagram, because he needed to show America how he celebrates the 4th of July.
Yeah. I'm just going
to
go...
Would you care to tell the people how he celebrates the 4th of July?
Blowing up stuff.
Exactly. I bet he had a Budweiser in his hand while he was shooting the video. I'm sure some little Disney Channel actress was scantily clad somewhere.
This one had clothes on in the video. I did watch one video. This one had clothes on. But, oh, God. I'm just going to read y'all verbatim what I have written about this topic. Transformers set video and photo. More blow-up garbage. Because that's exactly what this is. you see set photos of Transformers, and unless all the actors are there, they're filming nothing because, you know, the Transformers aren't there. And he's blowing up stuff. That's, I've just described to you what those photos look like. You don't have to go look at them. The only thing you need to know is he's dressed in all white because he mentions it in one of the pictures. That's it. He's blowing up stuff and filming a bunch of open air. There, ta-da, don't look.
What do you think he was blowing up, Chad?
Who knows? I'm maybe the master print of this movie, hopefully.
More Dinobots doing crazy things?
Yeah, because they're supposed to be back, which makes no sense. But none of this makes any sense. And
again, my biggest issue is, like, so the Dinobots were just asleep for thousands of years, and whenever, like, Optimus gets to Earth in the first movie, they don't just wake up and go help Optimus.
No, because that didn't make the story in the fourth one works, even though you can argue there is no story in the fourth
one. There is no story. There's just let us not end this movie four times.
Yeah, it's bang, bang, shoot, robot, bang, bang, China beer, bang, bang, Optimus kills. There it goes.
Optimus and Kelsey Grammer. What every little kid dreamed about growing up watching Transformers.
This last movie was like almost 3 hours, right?
Four. Almost 3 hours, yeah. Over 3 hours, I think.
I've seen it, well...
You fell asleep.
I fell asleep the first time.
And then blooded yourself and watched it on Netflix.
Yeah, and I still, like, that part I fell asleep for, I still don't know it. And I've watched the whole movie. I've stayed up specifically for that part. I don't know it.
Do you buy the ROM Space Knight idea? The fan theory about the logos looking similar and that the sword that Optimus gets out of the ship could potentially have been ROM's, and that's who he's flying off into space to go and find at the end?
I heard that at first, but the reason I don't think it's ROM is because, like I'm going to have to do right now, I'm going to have to explain to people who ROM is, because nobody knows who
ROM is. ROM Space Knights.
ROM is a character created, I think it is created by Hasbro, but it had his own comic book, a Marvel comic book.
Who wants to be part of his own shared universe. They want to include him in this G.I. Joe, Transformers, Candyland, Monopoly battleship world.
But nobody knows who ROM is. I know who ROM is because in third grade, I can only take the comic books I could find. And my third grade teacher had some comic books, and one of them was ROM. And I took it, and I still have it. I've never read it, but I know who ROM is because of that. I'm one of four people that know who ROM is. So they could stick him in here and try to make him part of the shared universe. But when you're sticking him in with Michael Bay, ROM is going to look just like the Transformers, the only two I can tell apart is the Optimus because he's the biggest and he has the pointy ears, and Bumblebee because he's yellow. The rest of them, they all look
and
alike.
And doesn't talk.
Yeah, so you can stick him in there and try to spin him off. What are you spinning off? Because he looks just like the rest of them. Generic robots that are blowing up stuff and got gears and grinds. Forget this movie, man.
So that is the latest update on Transformers The Last Knight. And the potential of ROM Space Knight showing up in a Michael Bay movie.
ROM's not even I've heard people say ROM's a great character. I think he's... I don't know anything because I didn't even read the comic, but he...
You need to go home and read the comic so you can have a formed opinion.
I've never read the comic, but he doesn't deserve what Michael Bay's going to do to him. So, for ROM's sake...
Does Bad Boys 3 deserve what Michael Bay's...
He's niched out something that works with Bad Boys. So.
Actually, I think Joe Cornish is going to direct.
That's right. Which excites me more because it's not Michael Bay. But those kind of movies, I don't have a problem with Michael Bay. The end of Bad Boys 2, you know, that going to Cuba. Yeah, you push it a little bit, but he's okay with that. It's just this.
He is the guy. So, yeah. I mean, him and Jerry Bruckheimer.
I mean, I don't blame Jerry. Jerry's like, this dude's making me money. Why am I going to say no?
You know who somebody should say no to? Somebody should say no to James Cameron. Because he's going to create 4 Avatar movies. And he's going to shoot them simultaneously.
Again, we said months ago, we weren't believing this till Cameron started rolling. We said they had to start rolling by April.
To get the tax credit.
It is July. There has been nothing of this movie.
I'm wondering if someone's going to ask Zoe Saldana about it while she's out at Comic-Con or doing press for Beyond.
God, I wish we could do that, because I sure would ask her. She'd be like, so, when you going to get blue? Are you going to get blue? Tell me when you're going to get blue. And spend the rest of your life in Australia filming these fajillion movies that he wants to make.
Sigourney Weaver, too. She's talking more about Neil Blomkamp's delayed Alien movie than she is about James Cameron's mystical Avatar sequels.
That whole Alien thing is just... it's perplexing to me. Because Sigourney keeps talking about it. And
like, again... And again, because Ridley just decided, hey, you know, I know you've got this great idea that's going to reinvigorate the franchise, but you know what, Bubba? I did Prometheus, and I want to do my next movie, so The Martian. Thank you very much. Go have a nice day.
Yeah, that is what... that The Martian is why we're getting more Ridley Scott Aliens. Neil Blomkamp needs to go find Drew Goddard and be like, it's your fault that he had to take over that job. And now I can't do my movies.
If you want to do 6 Degrees of Separation, actually, it's Avi Arad's fault for for screwing over the Spider-Man universe so bad that the Sinister Six movie couldn't happen.
If you want to blame Avi, we're getting further enough away from the good things that he's done that I'll blame him for everything. So we can do that. I'll go.
All right. So there was this small little tidbit. Bryan Cranston is out promoting a movie that he's doing about Pablo Escobar and drug lords.
Oh, yeah.
And he had some things to say about Power Rangers. So let me read you the direct quote from Bryan Cranston's interview when asked about the tone of the forthcoming Transformers movie coming to theaters January 2017.
That's right, yeah.
Quote, I wasn't really high on it until I had talked to the producer and read the script and talked to the director. After that, I went, gee, this is different. This is as different as reimagining as the Batman television series as it became the Batman movie series. You can't compare those two, and nor can you compare this movie version of Power Rangers to that television series. It's unrecognizable for the most part. There are tenets of the folklore that you hold onto for sure, but the inspiration is different, and the sensibility of it and the approach to the filmmaking is completely different. Your thoughts on a unrecognizable, completely different Power Rangers movie. By the way, people have been running with this The Dark Knight. If that's the actual quote, the Batman movie series, he could be talking about Burton's Batman movies on.
Yeah, that's the point I want to take, because I kind of know where you're about to go with it.
I'm about to just know. So it's January. They look like Tony Stark had an Extremis-inspired nightmare and created these costumes.
Hold on. I'm going to let you have your little blow your gas in a minute.
And Rita Repulsa is sexy and not Asian.
She can't be both. Well, I mean, she's not.
She's not Asian. Okay. Elizabeth Banks is a lot of things. Asian is not one of them.
Okay, all right. But I'm just going to, because everybody is running with the Dark Knight angle, he is not saying that Power Rangers is going to be like Dark Knight.
Nolan's name is nowhere in the statement.
Yeah. Well, all he's saying is what he directly compares it to is the original Power Rangers series to the Adam West Batman series, and he's saying that the transition from that
from Adam West to Keaton,
he doesn't specify, but we can say Keaton if you want to say Nolan, it's fine. But the point
is,
say
Joel Schu- if you want to say Val Kilmer,
no, we can't say that one because that's more like Adam West. But the point is, it's going from the kind of campy thing to a more serious, maybe dark kind of take on the characters, and that transition is what drew him to it. He's not saying that it's going to be the Dark Knight of Power Rangers. Not saying that. He's just saying it's going from the campy stuff like Adam West to a more serious take. And I mean, I can't fault him for liking that. I don't know.
And it helps that he has some bona fides with the fan base for what he did with the original series.
Yeah. Now, if we're going to go from the Adam West Batman to, like, the Keaton Batman, I can be more in line with that because that's, you know, there's still goofy stuff. It's not completely the dark.
Batwing.
Yeah. Everything that you know about Batman is there. It's better represented, but it's not completely, you know, gravel voice Christian Bale.
Better comparison probably would be going from Christopher Reeve's Superman to Brandon Ross Superman Returns. Or Henry Cavill's Superman.
Because
Reeves and Cavill's Superman have very little in common because Zack Snyder does not have the same interpretation as Donner did.
No, I have thoughts about that, but I'm not. That we're not going back to my albatross right now. But yeah, so if it's it can. It depends on how dark they want to go. And in his comments, we don't know that. But that's what we are. He's not saying it's a dark night. For people that's running with it's a dark night, that's not what he's saying. So now, tantrum away.
Unrecognizable, completely different. Tenets of the folklore that you hold on to for sure. But the inspiration is different. The sensibility of it and the approach to the filmmaking is completely different. Well, of course, making a episodic television series that you have to build around the footage you have from Japan is going to be completely different from shooting a wholly new film where you can determine what elements, you know, what your villain's going to be and how things are going to look. And not only that, technology is different. Technology is way better now than it was in 1993. Even in 1995, when they did the original Mighty Morphin movie with the original cast, technology's come a long way. Ivan Ooze looks a lot better in Apocalypse than he does in Power Rangers the movie.
So many jabs in that one comment.
But, I mean, there comes a point in which where does it cease to be the power of the Mighty Morphin? Like, where does it cease to have that fun that, you know, I had Eric Goldman on IGN pointed out that the poster that they put out, literally if it didn't have Power Rangers on it, it looks like your standard high school seniors, American Pie, last summer together before college movie. Like, that's kind of the vibe that that movie should have, a Varsity Blues, a American Pie type vibe, not a American Beauty vibe. Like, those are two separate vibes to have. And what he talks about there with there are parts of tenets of the folklore that you hold on to for sure. Well, the antagonist's name is Rita Repulsa. The protagonists are led by Zordon. There are going to be putty people. You know, the costumes are the original color. The Zords... all match the original call-outs to the original dinosaurs. So there are tenets of the folklore that have carried over. But at what point does it become Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in name only and start being, you know, a deconstruction of superheroism in yellow, red, pink, and blue, and green suits?
Well, we also have to take in consideration who's saying this and why he's saying it. Because Kranz is saying this because he worked on the original series. At that time, he's like a late 30s, early 40s guy.
It was a paycheck. It was something to help keep him.
So he's probably telling people, I'm working on a stupid kid show. He just thinks it's completely mindless and dumb.
Yes, right before Malcolm in the Middle.
So to him, it's just this stupid kid show. And what they're doing now is so much different than that. But we don't. It could just be going to the more serious, but still keeps all the fun stuff. But that's leaps and bounds from what he knew it as. So because he makes it vague with the Batman that he's talking about, we don't really know. Because
there are still tenets of the folklore of the Adam West Batman in Burton's movie.
Yeah.
There aren't tenets of that in the Dark Knight trilogy.
No, not at all, really. Not really.
So, I mean, that's part of the issue. I mean, I just, like, I need there to still be an out, like, again, there are problems. I don't have nearly as many problems with the Power Rangers movie as I do with the Ghostbusters movie, the novelization of which is out now. So if you don't want to have to watch this movie, you can simply buy the book. You still support the IP, don't have to support the movie. So, you know, they're a tenant, like, Rita Repulsa's young, sexy, vibrant, green, looks like Uma Thurman in Batman and Robin. Like, she's not Asian, she's going for the sexy, campy, over-the-top. The suits look like something, like I said, an extremist dream that Tony Stark had, down to the glowing chest piece. You know, they got all the casting pitch perfect and right to where it should be. You're doing Zordon, but, like, we haven't seen a trailer to my knowledge yet.
No, I would imagine we get it
at Comic-Con. But I just, that's my like, some taking something that should have the American Pie sensibility and turning it into American Beauty is more of my concern.
Yeah. I mean, it's a valid concern, but with the ambiguity in his comment, we could still be getting American Pie.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's not as black and white as it is being reported to be. All right, so let us move on to our comic book movie news of the week. Chad, we're coming up on our 1 year anniversary in our beloved Comic-Con celebration, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, and before that we get Star Wars Celebration. And we know that both Marvel and DC are going to Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. Now, on this very podcast, we had talked about the fact that there would probably be an EW spread for DC coming before Comic-Con. And we thought that maybe that would be for Wonder Woman, which has not gotten, you know, she's one of the strongest parts of Dawn of Justice. People are aching to see more of her and learn more about Gal Gadot and what she's going to bring to the role. So we thought that maybe they would utilize an EW spread to pump that movie up, especially considering that they have already announced their plans for Suicide Squad for Comic-Con, which is massive.
Yeah.
From, like, costume contest on the floor to cast autograph sessions on the floor to a panel to possibly even screening the movie for people at Comic-Con. Like, they're going full out to promote Suicide Squad at Comic-Con. Like, the only other movie I can remember doing this hard was Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah.
Now, we know how well that worked out for that movie, but, like, they're going full force with that. But they chose, instead of doing Wonder Woman for the EW spread, they chose to do Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And we got some footage, some pictures, and we got a synopsis of some kind. And what'd you make of the pics that we got this go around?
I mean, we've been getting a whole bunch of Suicide Squad stuff anyway.
Well, because so. David Ayer is, like, again, I can't wait to see that guy get the microphone.
Yeah. There is a quote that I didn't put in there that he had, and he basically talks about how Suicide Squad was like a tertiary property for DC, and now it has all the weight of the world. And it wasn't meant to have all the weight of the world, but it can sustain it, and I'm kind of waiting to see what happens. So, yes, that guy getting the mic is going to be great. I need to see that live. Somebody needs to stream that. But the pictures themselves, I mean, it's all of the characters we've seen before. There's nothing really new in them.
I saw bits and pieces of some of those scenes from the trailer, the two trailers that they put out. I've seen some of the dining room stuff with Joker and some of the action beats I've seen.
Yeah.
Like, the pictures didn't really do anything for me. Like, the article itself is going to do more for me.
Yeah.
With painting that picture of what this movie is.
Yeah. I still haven't read the article, but, yeah, what I got...
I think it either hits newsstands today or it hit newsstands next week.
I think it's today. I think it's this week's one. But the synopsis is what really caught my attention, because this is the first time we've actually got a real synopsis.
Suicide Squad follows the events of Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice and takes place in a post-Superman world where the government tries to determine how to respond in the event that an alien with more villainous intentions visits Earth. Ruthless intelligence officer Amanda Weller, played by Viola Davis, offers to recruit society's worst criminals, those possessing lethal skills and superhuman powers. Her first target, the possessed archaeologist, anarchist, June Moore, slash Enchantress, June Moon, slash Enchantress. I'm sorry, DC fanboys, I know I am butchering this. When Midway City is threatened by a powerful mystical enemy, Weller's plan gets the go-ahead. She cuts deals with the whole squad of prisoners. Deadshot, played by Will Smith, gets his Second Amendment rights reinstated. Harley is set free from her cage, played by Margot Robbie. Diablo, played by Jay Hernandez, steps out of his fireproof prison. Boomerang, played by Jai Courtney, and Slipknot, played by Adam Beach, each get to wield their own signature weapons once more. And Killer Croc emerges from, played by a guy who I will not even attempt to pronounce his name, emerges from the swamp. The only condition is this: obey orders or die. This is strictly enforced by squad leader Rick Flagg, the samurai Cantina, played by Karen Fukunaga, and, of course, the explosive devices developed by, guess what, Wayne Enterprises, inserted into their necks. However, the arrival of the tatted-up Gotham City mega-criminal the Joker might doom the mission, thanks to his plan to reunite with his true love, Harley.
Yeah, there's a whole lot there. The first thing is, red flag went up when you heard Wayne Enterprises. And that kind of goes along with the end of the Ultimate Edition, where he mentions Arkham, and it makes it seem like he knows, like he has more access to Arkham than you would think Batman would have. So that says that he knows all about Amanda Waller's plan and all this kind of stuff, and it's a way to bring him in. Even though it seems like we're only getting him in like flashback stuff, but we've got another easy way in for Bruce Wayne and Batman. But then the end is what really got me with the Joker's role in all this, because they've said from the beginning, well, when they announced the Joker was in it, everybody was like, he shouldn't be in the Suicide Squad because he's the Joker and he's nuts and he would kill everybody. You can't control the Joker.
And that's why rumors popped up that, you know, he would be the adversary of the Suicide Squad.
I never thought he would be the adversary because I just didn't think he needed to be the adversary for Suicide Squad. He is nuts enough to send a team after him, he's like a Batman thing. The squad needs to go handle different stuff. But from what it sounds like, there is a separate threat that we still don't know. And then you add in the Joker that's like, I don't care what y'all are trying to do, I'm trying to talk to her. So get out the way and let me talk to her. So they got to deal with this, and then they also got to deal with this crazy dude running around trying to mess up what they're doing. Which is kind of the dynamic I thought the Joker should have with everybody else involved. So that kind of made me more excited because it's kind of exactly what I wanted the dynamics to be. Now it's just a matter of seeing if they actually execute it and pull it off right.
Brightest color palette of any DC movie yet.
Yeah, I think that was before, that was by design before Batman vs. Superman, but it was definitely pushed heavily after
the reception. I still say wait till the movie comes out to announce the Harley Quinn spinoff movie. You would have gotten more juice out of that orange afterwards, especially if everybody takes to her the way that most people anticipate them taking to her.
I agree, because until you said that, I forgot that it was that they had even said that before.
Pitched it to him. That Margot Robbie pitched, after doing her hours and hours of comic book research on Harley, that she pitched a Harley Quinn spinoff movie.
Yeah, if Suicide Squad is the hit that they need it to be, and people like Harley as much as we think they will, if you announce it now, I think, yeah, you would have gotten way more run out of it than what you got now. Because we did it, what, like in the last month, and I forgot, and I read this stuff every day. So yeah, they should have waited on that one.
Why do you think Enchantress is the first person she goes to?
Probably
because of the mystical element.
Maybe because it sounds like there's a mystical enemy there. So yeah, maybe that's why she's the first one they go to, or maybe she's not in Arkham and she's trying to recruit her in, or just because she's possessed that she's like, okay, she's sane half the time, maybe I can actually like do something with her. But because she's the first one said, it makes me think that the rest of these is like really like, okay, I gotta scrape the bottom of the barrel and take these dudes. I don't want to do it, but I gotta take these dudes.
By the way, poor Rick Flag. We all know what's gonna happen to Rick Flag in this movie. We already know from the trailers, from like the fact that Will Smith has an interaction scene with just about every member of the team.
Well, I mean, let's really look at this. Deadshot is Will Smith. Rick Flag is Joel Kinnaman. I know who Joel Kinnaman is, but most people, if you said him, like, I don't know.
It was supposed to be Tom Hardy.
It was, and if it was Tom Hardy, then maybe it's a little bit different.
No, because that's what the comic books dictate. The comic books dictate that Rick Flag dies and Deadshot takes over as leader of the group.
See, that's new, and I don't know if they...
Potential spoiler.
I mean, they could do it. There's nothing saying they couldn't, but...
Again, you just stated Will Smith turned down Independence Day Resurgence to do Suicide Squad, has multiple film contract.
But Joel Kinnaman's on the upswing. He has another movie coming out with Tom Holland, and he was good in House of Cards, I've heard. He could be on the upswing, but yeah, if it's going to come down to that. But I mean, I know for certain one of these characters is going to die because
it's a dirty. If it's a Dirty Dozen movie,
yeah, somebody's got to die. You got to prove the point with somebody. And there's one character that you see like in the trailers a little bit, but not a whole lot. And if you look at the name of the actors there, you can figure out which one it is. I won't say which one it is, but you can tell which one it is.
Indeed. So what about Midway City? We've known a lot about the geography of the DC movies. We now know that Gotham and Metropolis are sister cities. Yes. So where does Midway City fit in?
Okay, so according to this, Midway City is like the... See, DC's weird. They have surrogates for... Metropolis is like a surrogate for New York. But Gotham is a surrogate for New York, too. And so they kind of have surrogates for cities where, you know, Midway is a surrogate for Chicago. It was introduced to be Hawkman, Hawkgirl City. I guess now it has some ties to Suicide Squad, but I don't really know much about it because I don't really deal with the Hawks at all. Everything I pulled up had the Hawks, and then there were pictures of Suicide Squad. It might just be because of the movie, but I think they just picked a city that we're not going to, Batman and Superman are going to wreck. So Midway is good. We're not going to do the Hawks anytime soon.
Alrighty. So let's move on to some Justice League casting. Julianne Louise Jones cast in a mystery role. Any thoughts on what that potential mystery role will be at this point?
I mean, when you hear that, your first guess is Darkseid or Steppenwolf. But there's so many other people in this, who knows? But
I think they're going to need a bigger name for Steppenwolf and an even bigger name for Darkseid.
Yeah.
So I would think that he's going to be either on the Atlantean or the Amazonian side of that.
Oh, then he's on the Atlantean.
Yeah, the Atlantean side of that. Conflict.
He could just be some regular dude, like Scoot McNairy was legless guy in Batman vs. Superman. He could just be something like that. It's just that we don't have, after the massive set visit drop, we haven't had anything, and we won't have anything until Comic-Con, when we'll probably get some footage and a picture of them all together, probably including Superman.
The Thor, the wave, the come out and wave like they did a couple of years ago with the Trinity.
I don't think they can afford that anymore. They need to. Priority one should be to sell Suicide Squad. But following right on that is
sell Wonder Woman.
No, it's sell Justice League. Like, I think they have enough goodwill from Batman vs. Superman and Wonder Woman's appearance in that, that they're like, we can kind of ride that out a little bit. But everybody's still uneasy about the movie that Zack Snyder is still doing. So, and we need that one to hit. So, sell Justice League 2. And then to sell Wonder Woman. Because you have all next year to sell Wonder Woman.
Okay. So, I don't believe we've, because we were off for the 4th of July weekend, I don't believe that we were able to accurately touch on the Ultimate Edition of Dawn of Justice.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on the movie that is now eligible for Academy Awards because it's such a different movie.
I would not say that. Okay, so
that comment is not endorsed.
Yeah. So watching the Ultimate Edition, the first time I watched it, because I've watched it several times because I'm a glutton for punishment. The first time I watched it, it actually didn't feel like 3 hours. And that's because when you watch the theater cut, you can tell that things are hacked out of there. When you watch this one, it's like, oh, there is a story here. There are things that run through that make all of this make sense. So in that sense, the movie's greatly improved with the Ultimate Edition. However, if you still, the character issues, which is what most of the people's problems are, they're still there. You're not gonna completely fix them. Superman to me comes off better because we have more Clark Kent. We have Clark Kent actually being a reporter and standing up to Perry White and figuring out what is going on with Batman and all this stuff. And it actually gives him a motivation to actually want to confront Batman. But he still doesn't talk to Superman. They do show him in the Capitol scene when it blows up. It doesn't just end with him sitting there in the fiery blaze. They actually show him trying to save people. He flies down, brings somebody to a paramedic, and you see that he's been doing that with a few people. So you see him being Superman. And they also fix the whole, the key point in that Capitol scene is that he's sitting there, and in theater cut he says, I didn't see it, referring to the bomb. And when he says that, everybody's like, yeah, you didn't see it. What are you doing? You're Superman. You're supposed to see this stuff. In the Ultimate Cut, because they had to cut out so much stuff, you missed the scene where somebody says the bomb in the chair was lined with lead, so Superman couldn't see it. That was the whole point of that, but they cut it out. And
no,
missed.
That was in the original cut.
No, it wasn't, because Jenna Malone says it, and they cut her completely out. They never say that it was lead line. It was just, he just says he couldn't see it. So when she says that, it's like, well, goddammit, you need to say that just so Superman doesn't look like a complete idiot.
So this is the cut that was being shown in the first test screenings.
It had to be.
Right, so what does this do for Zach? How does this, because we talked on the podcast immediately following the first time when we saw it together, that there was, it wasn't coherent.
At all.
Theatrical cut is not coherent. It jumps around. It. There are things like the African woman testifying in front of Congress where it takes you like 5 minutes to figure out what she's talking about. The Africa scene alone is not.
That is a big part that's fleshed out, because in the theater cut, you just see him show up and then people are blaming him for killing people. In this one, before he shows up, they kill the people and they burn them to make it look like Superman burned all the people that were there. So you understand why the Africa scene is there in the first place. Yeah, it just makes the story make more sense. But if you still had those, like if you had problems with Batman killing people and like stuff like that, which is what I think is still the issue with Zach, because I forget what interview I read, but it was like there are certain things that were in the movie that weren't necessarily in the script that are like director choices. Which when I heard that, the first thing I thought was the Batmobile scene. The script probably says he has a Batmobile chase. Zach's like, well, he should probably kill some people here. That is that kind of stuff that is the real issue with Zach. I think this movie helps, it makes you think, it makes you realize Zack Snyder's not a complete idiot and kind of put together a story that, while not might not be the best, is at least coherent. But even, I still think they have the clamps on him, so he won't do stuff like...
Because he fundamentally does not understand the characters that he's using.
To everyone else, yes. To him, I think he does. Like, it's weird, because I've heard him talk about it, and he has a loose grasp on it, but it's like with his movies. He has a loose grasp on everything, but it's like the little stuff that kind of just gets away from him.
The nuances.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so that Ultimate Cut is out on video on demand and on in available to buy now. So let's move on to some of our Marvel news of the week. So, Thor Ragnarok is now filming in Australia. Our beloved Kate Blanchett is somewhere down in Australia wearing a very funny headdress and playing Mistress Helena. And for some reason, you know, Hemsworth is running around with a roller coaster. Your thoughts, sir, on the commencement of filming of Thor Ragnarok?
As with all, like, shooting announcement, it just lets us know that this is real and it's really happening. Like, the reason we didn't think Justice League was happening for a long time was that even though they said it was shooting before Batman vs. Superman,
no start of production press release.
Nothing until the big information dump. So we know Thor is real, it's happening, it's tangible. Also, Spider-Man started like a couple days before that. I don't know if we said it last time.
Thor Ragnarok started on July 4th. And then a week and a half before that,
Spider-Man started. Okay. But other than that, we really don't know much, except that
Kevin Feige will not know what time zone he's in because he's bouncing back and forth between Atlanta and Melbourne.
I kind of want to know how he does that, because every other, like, the other ones have been shot pretty much in Atlanta.
Or London back in the first phase. They used Pinewood a lot for the first phase of Marvel movies.
I'm curious, is this the first time it's been so, two movies at the same time, and they've been so far apart?
Well, see, I think what's probably going to end up happening is D'Esposito will be down in Sydney, in Melbourne, and then Feige will be on set in Atlanta.
That one.
And there is Skype and phone calls and things that can go on now that couldn't have gone on 10, 15 years ago.
And I trust this process. I'm just going to say this just to think about. So that would indicate to me that Feige places a higher priority on Spider-Man than Thor. And while I can understand that, Thor is the one that's kicking off Avengers. So it's just like an interesting conundrum he's in. But if I was
with with a 24-hour time, a 20, 21, 22-hour time difference.
If I were him, Spider-Man. I'm dealing with Sony. I'm dealing with Sony. Can't mess this up. And it's Spider-Man. So, I would be over there. Thor can probably manage with D'Esposito.
But, I mean, it's important that we're on that road. Natalie Portman's just thankful that she's not having to be down there.
I keep forgetting she's not in it.
Nope. Which... her and Kay Downing's not in it. Earth only in it for, like, half a scene. Or, like, 10 or 15 minutes.
Kat Dennings. No Kat Dennings?
No Kat Dennings. Yes!
I don't mind Kat Dennings, but I don't like her. I don't... she became overbearing in the second one.
They were trying to take a good thing from the first one and overplay it.
Yeah.
The way most people do in a sequel.
Yeah.
So, my most anticipated movie coming up for Marvel, Doctor Strange.
Oh, we're not getting that one.
No. So Doctor Strange we finally got a name. The name had been revealed by kind of like a happenstantial toy expo thing that happens from time to time because nerds are like... kids
looking
at
for
Christmas.
Every little thing.
Nerds are like kids at Christmas, and they're constantly shaking the present and feeling the present to try and figure out what's inside.
Or in my case, just taking the tape off.
Right.
And then putting it back.
Right. So, we know that Calissus? How do you pronounce this?
Let's go with Calissus.
Calissus. Okay. So, Calissus is Madden Mikkelsen's villain character in Doctor Strange, and they've started putting out prequel comics, which is kind of weird because, you know, the movie's November.
Yeah.
And like with both Avengers movies, when they did the prequel comics, they were in April, the month before. So doing a prequel comic now doesn't really make as much sense as doing a prequel comic in October.
Yeah.
But some of the information that came from that prequel comic was that this particular gentleman was at one point one of the Masters of Dominion, Masters of the Universe. I know, yes, comic bears. I know he's not an actual Master of the Universe, but he is a mystic along with...
The
former manservant.
Wong. Yeah. And I think in the comics he's actually Edgy of Four. I forget his
character
name.
He's also... Yes.
Yeah, he's...
Baron Mordo.
Mordo, yeah. He's in the comic, he's one of Mordo's, like, guys, so...
Because people were, in Hollywood Reporter and other places at the early stages, were having trouble deciphering the difference between Baron Zemo and
Baron Mordo.
Baron Mordo.
Yeah, two completely different guys.
Yeah.
But, this is, I'm not big on Doctor Strange, so you tell me anything, I'm like, okay, I believe you. It's Matt Nicholson, and he's a good guy, and he's a good actor, and you have the whole cast and director and all this. So I'm expecting good things. It's nice to have a name that we'll probably know how to pronounce in a couple weeks. But with learning that he was one of Baron Mordo's guys, and
he was on that same level with the Ancient One, Mordo, Wong.
So seeing that...
And the fact that Feige has said on the Civil War press tour that he is a guy who broke off into his own sect and thought the Ancient One was just trying to protect her own power base.
With that, and knowing that Mordo is generally Doctor Strange's big guy outside of Dormammu, will they play this movie where he's actually, the sect is actually part of Mordo's sect, and he's like the high guy, and Mordo's like playing both sides until the end?
That could be a possibility, or there is that line that Feige says where he goes, the world may be better off where if we were allowed to let some of the other things through. Some of those other things could be
Dormammu. Mm-hmm. That is I missed that line, but yeah, that does scream of Dormammu. I hope they don't do Dormammu in this one. Maybe we see him like at the end or at like the stinger, but yeah, build this world first, because Doctor Strange is unlike anything we've had before.
And you know, I know very many people, especially one in particular, are very angry about the fact that the imagery looks very similar to Inception, but I think we're going to get some new imagery here in a couple of weeks that's going to kind of break that mentality.
I mean, I really think the Inception thing is just because that one scene where
the Mads city is falling.
Like the city falling, and then Mads does this thing where it like kaleidoscopes out into the room. That's the only Inception stuff that I see in there, but I expect to see a lot of cool visuals in this. If nothing else, but
I think the imagery that was used in Ant-Man last year was meant to, in the Quantum Zone, was meant to kind of prepare audiences for how trippy they're going to get in Strange.
Yeah, and I think trippy can be fun. Trippy is different. Trippy should be fun.
Which is what they need. Because you get people yelling and screaming about the Marvel formula when you get the opportunity to do things like Guardians of the Galaxy or Doctor Strange, which can deviate from that Marvel formulaic thing.
Yeah, you go heavy into it.
Right. I mean, you've got the capital. You don't have to worry about, you know, Ant-Man made $500 million worldwide. I mean,
yeah,
you have the capital. You can pull it off. Not everybody may like it, but you can pull it off.
Yeah, you're not going to lose money on this movie.
No. So it's going to be interesting. A November release date, and they will be at Comic-Con with both Doctor Strange and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Gunn has officially said that they are bringing footage. But as with all Marvel panels at Comic-Con, the footage will not be released online afterwards. So we'll be relying on secondhand descriptions, and then of course whenever the shaky cam video
eventually comes out. Unless Comic-Con decides to step up their game.
Or unless Comic-Con decides... Because like a month later or 2 months later, almost all the panels are online through the actual Comic-Con YouTube channel. So
they'll be up sooner now because they have their own little paid subscription thing. But I still don't know. We'll probably get the panels like right after
Comic-Con. Yeah, you're not going to get the footage.
We're not going to get the footage, yeah.
Yeah, which is how they work now. If you go back and you watch like the the announcement panel, the legendary panel from last year, where they had the announcement, a couple of years ago, no, last year, where they had the announcement about Godzilla 2.
Uh-huh.
You have all the talking point parts, but Gareth Edwards' video announcing Godzilla 2 isn't shown. Yeah. So that's the kind of thing that they'll do. So, I mean, it's what kind of selling job do you think they're going to do on Strange for Comic-Con? Trailer? And I'm assuming get everybody on stage, trailer, talk about the film.
Yeah, it's time for another trailer. What the first one came out, what, in
Chemical,
May?
Kimmel. During the Marvel week, which was April.
Yeah, it was right.
Leading up to Civil War.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's time for another trailer. So, yeah, we'll
and
probably
it's get November, like, so, a November release date.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll get everybody on stage. You get the trailer, like you said. Yeah, I think that's the way to push
strategy. Have Tilda Swinton talk about the Ancient One. Have Benedict Wong, have Wong talk about Wong.
Wong, yeah. That's still funny.
And, you know, just kind of calm the racial tension fears down about the stereotyping and trafficking in Asian culture while not having any actual Asians and that kind of a thing. So, I mean, that, you know, again, like, Nick Fury was a white guy in the comics. Marvel made him a black dude in the movies. So, like, Marvel does this a lot. They just don't get credit for it. And in this particular instance, they chose to take a old Asian white dude and make him a woman. Now, the problem was they made him a white woman, not an Asian woman. But, so that's all we've got for Marvel this week. We are both looking forward to Comic-Con coming up and the news that should come out of there from both of those.
Yeah, it's going to be that'll be a busy show.
They have four films right now that they can talk about. They can talk about, you know, Strange and Guardians are wrap filming and are in post-production. Spider-Man and Thor are in production. So, I mean, think about that for a second. Like, one of their 17 movie, their 16 movie, and one of their 17 movies is done. The other two 17 movies are in production.
Yeah, and we'll probably get at least a sizzle reel for both. Probably not as, I mean,
I think concept art for both. Yeah, and again, I don't know what the relationship between Sony and Marvel is. Yeah. If Sony's going to do that at their panel and just say, here's Spider-Man, here's Homecoming, which, again, let me reiterate, I am very happy that the girl from Nice Guys has been cast in Homecoming. She is a outstanding comedian. She has great comedic timing with Shane Black in Nice Guys. And if you can do Shane Black comedy, you can go off and do whatever. You'll be fine.
You know, I'm glad they keep adding good people.
And her with John Francis Daly dialogue should be fine as well.
Yeah, but I really think we'll get something with
the web shooter video hit today or this week.
Which,
with Holland in costume using the web shooters.
I haven't seen that. I saw the picture from yesterday where 1 year out picture, and it was basically him somewhere high taking a selfie of Spider-Man, which was fun. The kid's having fun being Spider-Man, so that's always a good thing. A
little bit more fun than Tobey Maguire or
Andrew Garfield started off having fun because he did the whole thing at Comic-Con. He dressed as Spider-Man 2 times at Comic-Con. And I liked Andrew Garfield better than Tobey Maguire. Tobey Maguire was always like, yeah, I'm Spider-Man because I kind of got to be. So, but this kid looks like he's having a blast. So I think that'll carry over.
Hopefully. So let's move on as we wrap up this podcast. The next, when we gather next together to do a podcast, there will be a Star Wars celebration commencing in Europe. We got the news this week that the Rogue One panel at the very least will stream. So what are our expectations for the Rogue One trailer and or panel and footage? Let me step back. What are our expectations for Star Wars Celebration in terms of news?
We will get another Rogue One trailer. We will probably get the name of Episode 8. And then the other random assortment of news that comes with Star Wars, like Rebels and all that kind of stuff.
I'm expecting a trailer for Rogue One, which we know is coming. I expect lots of more detailed quotes about the movie than what they gave in the EW piece about Rogue One. Yeah. I expect Gareth Edwards to go on the record about that, and I also expect Gareth Edwards, if he does side interviews, to be asked about Godzilla 2 and why he decided to step away from that project. So I'm looking for that kind of news. I do think we get the title for Episode 8. I don't think they're going to Comic-Con. I think they're just going to do all their Star Wars stuff during Star Wars Celebration. I think that we're going to get the name of Episode 8, and I think there will be no better place to do that, because then all the nerds can start figuring out what
it means.
What it means and deciphering it. And letting that mystery box play out till December when we get a trailer. And I think we'll get the name. I think we'll get some Carrie Fisher melting down on stage again. I think we'll get, you know, interesting quotes from Anthony Daniels and some other people about 40th anniversary, which is coming up next year. And I think that we'll get some news on Rebels and Rebels' third season, and there'll be a panel, and they'll let us probably know how much more Vader is going to be in season 3. And, you know, and then I expect the announcement of you know, Comic-Con, what the dates for Orlando next year for Celebration. So that's what I expect out of Celebration. And then, of course, we'll move straight from Celebration into Comic-Con. But I think this is a very important trailer for them. I think you have to alleviate some of the fears, and I think, as we talked about in this podcast before, all you have to literally show is Vader, like, mowing people down, or even just igniting his lightsaber, and it will quell all of the worry and fear about, oh my god, they're going to not do a war movie, they're going to Disney-fy it and give us garbage.
Yeah, I think, I don't want to see a whole lot of Vader in this trailer. For me, you light up the lightsaber and then you pan up and see the glow off his helmet, shut down the trailer, it's done. But I think you're exactly right. The trailer's going to be 3 minutes, so it has to alleviate the fears, but it also has to educate people that, yes, this is still not Episode 8.
But I think they can do that by releasing the official name for Episode 8 at Celebration.
I still don't think it works for the lay people. I think the lay people are just like, yeah, they're like, oh, Star Wars movie in December, yeah, I'm going. You have to be like, no.
New Hope.
Come. We want you to come, but it's not 8. You still have to wait to see Luke Skywalker, but you can see Vader come kill some people. That they have to really push that home and the tone. I think they can do it. I think they will do it this time. But you know, it's just a matter of seeing how they pull it off.
So, Chad, our next episode. Would you like to tell the fine folks what our next episode is going
to
be?
I keep laughing every time I think Brian's about to wrap it up, because I know we haven't talked about his albatross, which is Ghostbusters. We finally get to see it. He mentioned earlier about the novel. He's got it. He's reading it. I'm waiting to see what he thinks. We get reviews
Sunday.
So,
and I've been petrified with great fear to ask my friends about what they saw.
Yeah, so we have to wait till then, but next week should be a very good one.
Well, next week, barring any kind of unforeseen circumstances, on that Thursday night we will be commencing our timely podcast directly after witnessing this movie.
Yeah,
which will be fun. And then after we finish getting our Ghostbusters fix next week, we will be doing a Comic-Con and a Star Wars Celebration preview and wrap-up, or a preview for Star Wars Celebration, and then preview for Comic-Con on next week's episode. So you'll be getting two episodes next week. Paul Feig probably should avoid listening to one of them. So that'll about do it for this week. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter at BCWTigerFan, as I will be regurgitating just quelching all of my desires for next week's episode.
And I'm at the Mesh Theory, and I will be laughing at whatever his reaction is to this movie next week.
To the novel and the movie.
Oh, yeah.
So, without further ado, come back next week for our review of the Ghostbusters movie. For Chad, I am Brian. We will see you next week.